Today's episode is brought to you by Truly Odd Tees. Show your love for the paranormal with ghost hunting themed tees. Show off your favorite cryptids and paranormal topics. Head over to trulyoddtees.com to weird up your wardrobe and use promo code GHOSTHUNTER10 at checkout to take 10% off your order. As always, orders over $75 ship free inside the continental United States.
On this episode of Ghost Hunter Advice, this is one of the episodes I found from the original stream. Want to make sure that I get it back out to you guys, and this one is very special to me. This starts off telling my story of my haunting, what got me into paranormal investigations. We dive into intelligent hauntings just a bit and talk about some of the differences there, and then I end with one of my most interesting cases. What happens when the children of a very wealthy woman are super greedy and try to trick her into thinking her house is haunted? So make sure you listen all the way to the end for that. This has been remastered and edited, but you are still going to hear a bit of a sound difference because this episode was from, I think, about 5 years ago. So I hope you enjoy. This is one of the OG episodes. Here we go.
Advice from the pros. Advice from the pros. Stories from the haunted. From the haunted. You're listening to the Ghost Hunter Advice Podcast.
Welcome to episode 3 of the Ghost Hunter Advice Podcast. I'm Tanner, and today's episode we're going to be talking about why I ghost hunt and why so many people that I know ghost hunt. We'll also be getting into leading theories in intelligent hauntings and some of my more interesting stories from the past. Welcome back to the Ghost Hunter Advice Podcast. Guys, I'm going to get right into it today. So a lot of people ask me the question, why do I ghost hunt? Why would people want to go out and like put themselves in these situations? Going into haunted houses, going into different areas and just doing all this really weird stuff that, you know, normal people just can't wrap their head around. So I wanted to get into my why. And a reason and a theme that I've found with other ghost hunters is to why people get into this. And we'll tell some stories about some things I saw growing up as a child and some things that were, you know, going bump in my childhood home. Guys, I haven't finished setting up the studio yet, so you may hear a baby cry in the background. You may hear a dog bark. Sorry, I am working on soundproofing, but for this episode, the next couple, that is a possibility. So getting right into it, I have been ghost hunting since I was 16, basically since I was old enough to drive, and going out with equipment, going out with friends, working with teams, and it all stems from my childhood. So growing up, my grandmother was super into the occult, and she pretty much raised me. Like I was with her more than I was with my parents. So a lot of ghost stories, a lot of watching unsolved mysteries, and watching a bunch of different stuff on the television, listening to her stories that she used to tell when she was about when she was little, and some of the stuff that she had seen. So I just grew up predisposed to it and grew up, you know, kind of enjoying that. Also in my house, almost everybody has had an experience in the house that I grew up in. My mother actually, she used to talk about seeing this woman in a white gown with like long black hair standing over my crib when I was a baby. She is not the only person who saw that in the house later, and this was before she even told me the story. The reason that she told me the story was I kept seeing this thing in the house. My brother did too, and we would talk about it. So anyway, this lady in white that we would see sometimes in the house where I grew up, usually she was coming down the hall when she would appear, and I don't want this to sound like it was all the time. In the years that I lived there and while I was growing up, I mean, this happened where I actually saw her maybe 4 times. I think my brother saw her once or twice. And then my mom saw her once, that she actually talked about. So even growing up in a place and living in a home that is super active and is actually haunted, you don't see a lot of full-bodied apparitions running around the house. It's just not something that happens a lot. But I remember one time that I saw her, and this was the first time that I actually saw her like full body, and it wasn't just something moving out of the corner of my eye that looked like someone in a white gown with long black hair that could have been my imagination. I was in my bedroom, which was at the back of the house. I had some friends over, and we were watching television. I don't remember exactly what it was, but I think there were three of us back there. And I left the bedroom, and the way the house was laid out, when I walked out of the bedroom, the bathroom was directly to my right, and my bedroom was at the end of the hall. So I get up and I walk out of the bedroom. I open the door and I see this woman at the end of the hall. She's floating a couple of feet above the ground. Her feet are just kind of dangling. And she's in a position that looks like she might have been hung. She's wearing this long white gown. Her arms are slack down by her side. Her head's kind of tilted. And she doesn't have any eyes. Where the eyes are, it's just empty black sockets. And she appears almost two-dimensional. So looks more like a cardboard cutout of a person, just kind of floating above the ground at the end of the hall. She starts moving toward me and floating down the hallway. And as she gets to the bathroom, she stops briefly, and I am absolutely terrified. I'm standing there, and she just kind of floats sideways into the bathroom. She never actually turned. She was facing me the entire time, got to the bathroom, floated into the bathroom. So I walked back to the bedroom, and I sat down on the couch, and the guys were like, "I thought you were going to the bathroom." And I just looked down and was like, no, I can wait. So that was the first time that I saw her, like full bodied. And, that's what prompted my mom to finally tell me the story about seeing, you know, a woman in white with long black hair standing over my crib. She never saw her face. There were a couple of times where I saw her out of the corner of my eye, where I know that that's what that was. And it wasn't my imagination playing tricks on me. Most of the things that I remember growing up in that house, if I think about them and I really think about them, most of the stuff that I encountered was probably my imagination running away with me. That particular experience was 100% not my imagination running away with me. Another time, and this was after I was an adult, my brother was living in the house, and I was staying there for the weekend, and I was staying in the front room. And I laid down, I was trying to go to sleep, and I just couldn't sleep, and I'm laying there staring at the ceiling, and then she walks out of the, this is going to sound ridiculous, but she walks out of the closet, and this time, totally three-dimensional, looks like a person standing there, walks out of the closet, looks at me, and is just standing there, and I'm staring at her, same empty eyes, just these black holes where the socket should be. Everything else looks like a regular person except in black and white. And I decided I'm not going to blink because if I close my eyes, she's going to disappear and I'm just going to be freaked out. So I keep my eyes open and I'm sitting there and I'm staring and she just fades away. And I'm like, that's so much worse. So I got out of bed and I went to sit down in the living room. My brother gets up and walks into the living room with me. He looks at me and he's like, "Man, you can't sleep?" I go, "No." And he goes, "Dead chick in the closet?" And I said, "Yeah, have other people seen that?" And apparently people that stay there in that room report seeing something very similar to that. So that is something that I learned about the house that I grew up in. So we had a couple of beers, talked for a little bit, and then I went to sleep on the couch. So those are the two times that I saw her. Now, growing up, there was a ton of things that happened in the house. Things would fall over, things would move, we'd hear these weird noises that I don't even have words to describe that were coming from the inside of the house, coming from different rooms. I would be home alone, or my brother and I would be home alone, and we would hear something in the house moving around. My brother went upstairs once to turn off the air conditioner in the upstairs part of the house. He came back, ran back down the stairs, and said that he saw a man in a just kind of in a suit. I can't remember the color that he described it, but it was an older man wearing a suit, turned the air conditioner off, and it just freaked him out, and he came running down the stairs. So growing up in that, I had a lot of questions, you know, what is a ghost? What causes a haunting? Why is this happening at the house? Because we weren't able to find any records of anything where anyone had died on the property. And this particular house wasn't even connected to the property. My father had bought it from a plot of land over near the Lee University and had moved it to this property just outside of town. So we couldn't find a reason for the place to have two ghosts, or one ghost and another one stopping through, or I don't know. That's the only time that we ever saw anyone ever saw the old man. Usually it's the lady in white that's seen inside the house. But growing up, I had questions about why is this happening? You know, my grandmother would tell me ghost stories. And then if you read the blog and listen to the first podcast, I found that magazine that talked about a real ghost hunter. And I was like, oh my God, I want to do this. So I got into it, basically looking for answers from my childhood. Over the years, my why has changed. I became a licensed private investigator. I investigate fraud. I do surveillance. I look into theft. And basically, I just look into people that are being dishonest or people that are believed to be dishonest. And I try to find the truth in the situation. So that's kind of become my why. I just want to find out what the truth is in the situation or what the truths are in the situation. I think even as researchers and the general public, we have this need to put things into boxes. So we want to look at a haunting and say a haunting is caused by a ghost and a ghost is this one specific thing. But in 18 years that I've been doing this, each haunting has its own flavor or uniqueness about it. And I've noticed that there's no one way to describe what a ghost is. And we're going to take a second with this podcast and just talk about intelligent hauntings. I'm not even going to get into residual ones here. We'll actually have a podcast episode about residual hauntings coming up. Also, I'm going to be touching on that in my next blog post. So with intelligent hauntings, where we go in and there seems to be some sort of presence with a personality that is interacting with people similar to the house that I grew up in, and this is what we kind of think of when we think of traditional ghosts, there are a couple of different things that could be going on there. And one of them is, you know, the spirits of the dead coming back to make contact with the living, or they're cursed to haunt that place, or maybe they have unfinished business or whatever the reason is for them being there. It's the disembodied spirit of a once living person. And that, I believe, is the theory and what most people are trying to prove that hauntings are and that ghosts are. And I mean, from EVPs that we've gotten, from different forms of communication that we do. Yeah, I used to be slow to say this, but now, yeah, okay, it looks like some of the hauntings could be that. I'm not 100% sure, and I'm not 100% sold on that, but it looks like that is a definite possibility of some hauntings. So if only some hauntings are the spirits of the recently deceased or the, you know, past deceased, what causes the rest of them, and what are the rest of the intelligent style hauntings? You know, I think it's a couple of things. There was an experiment done where a bunch of people were told about a ghost and they believed, and this was the Philip experiment, and you guys can look this up, but they believed so hard and so long that there was a ghost in a building named Philip that manifestations started happening. So if you have a number of people that concentrate and believe in something, the combined belief in psychic energy could actually cause manifestations, which could be, you know, at least a couple of hauntings, especially those hauntings that happen around schools, places where there are a lot of people that keep hearing stories over and over and over again. You have so many people in there believing that one thing, manifestations start to happen. There's actually a place that I'm starting to look into right now where that could be true. There's no history of a death. There's no history of anybody associated with this particular location that has died and that would be haunting it. Yet we have these mysterious apparitions that are showing up and walking around and crates moving and different things. And you have hundreds of people that believe these stories and that believe that that's happening. And it's quite possible that that belief is what's causing the haunting. Just a mass ball of focused psychic energy that causes a haunting and causes manifestation to actually become real and a place to actually become haunted. Another theory for intelligent style hauntings are inhuman spirits. Some people call negative inhuman spirits demons, dryads, tree spirits. There's tons of names for them. But it's the spirit of something that was never actually alive and never actually had corporeal form, at least that we know of. And they either have always or have just been spirits so long that that is what they are. And they do tend to be a little bit more powerful than the other manifestations that I've talked about. The, you know, able to move large dresser drawers across the floor, lift furniture in the air, and just kind of wreak havoc. Different from a poltergeist, a poltergeist is actually a person with latent PK ability that manifests itself in a way that it appears to be a haunting, but it's basically just the subconscious of that person acting out and causing different manifestations around the house. This is actually a separate entity that's not a person or attached to a person that usually just wreaks havoc. So those are a couple of the buckets that the hauntings can fall into. A couple of theories, leading theories behind where ghosts come from and what they are. I think each of them probably has some merit. Like I was saying before, we can't really put stuff into boxes, especially when it's something that we do not know about. We simply just don't know what's going on with this. Anyway, guys, it's coming up. We're going to take a quick break to hear from the sponsor, and I'll be back in a minute. All right, welcome back. We are picking up where we left off with the theories of like where ghosts come from and what they are. And it gets really dangerous because a lot of us want to put things into one box or into one category and say, when a place is haunted or when this is going on, this is 100% what's going on. But it doesn't really work that way in this type of work. And what gets really dangerous is you have these so-called experts that want to tell you that they know 100% that a ghost, all ghosts are the spirits of the dead that are coming back, or all ghosts are manifestations of focused psychic energy, or a poltergeist with a human agent. And the truth is, guys, we just don't know. And that is the biggest why of why so many people ghost hunt, is because we don't know. This isn't unknown. We do know that something is happening. Tens of thousands of people experience something every year, but we have no idea what's going on or why they're experiencing it. Now, sometimes there are, you know, psychological issues. So as researchers, as investigators, we weed through those. We get to the ones that are the most promising and we look into it. Out of the ones we look into, the majority of those have natural explanations, but then we're left with the ones that we have no freaking clue what is going on. And that's what's so exciting about this field, is because it's an area that we can actually explore that we don't know anything about. We've explored just about every inch of the surface of this planet. We're limited as to how far we can go into space. This is something that we can look at and really understand. And one day we might discover that, hey, this is a natural thing that happens. These things are, you know, it did turn out that they're all non-corporeal entities, but it's natural. They've been here the entire time. It's just a different type of life form that we didn't know about, or it's a form of energy that is easily manipulated by thought. So when someone believes something is haunted, it becomes haunted and manifestations actually start happening. We find out that, hey, all of them are that. Or one day we're finally able to say, you know what, it's a little bit of everything. Which is kind of cool because everybody's kind of right. But yeah, that's why we do it. It's just, it's an unknown, and it makes it exciting to go out and to do. Also, people are terrified of the unknowns. People that have these things going on in their home or going on in their business, it is absolutely just gut-wrenching for them. Imagine waking up in the middle of the night and there's someone standing at the foot of your bed and you turn the light on and they're gone. Imagine walking down the stairs and something is pushing you. And in some of the more extreme cases, you know, this stuff, it can be very, very terrifying, even when it's not malevolent. So getting to go in and help people understand what's going on. Usually we're helping people understand why their house is not haunted, which is just as rewarding because we do get to give them some peace and closure. But when something is going on, being able to go in there, keep a relationship going with the family and help them through what's happening in their house. I mean, it's just it's a very rewarding way to spend your free time. Also gives you a lot of interesting stuff to write about if you ever want to start a blog or a podcast. And that is why I do it. That's why most of the people that I know that are in the field doing this, that's why they do it. And yeah, so that kind of closes that out. But when we're moving into a bit of a different topic, proving the paranormal, this is something that I hear a lot of ghost hunters and a lot of paranormal investigators saying, and trying to say that they use the scientific method, that they're scientific researchers. And the fact is that as ghost hunters, as paranormal investigators, we are not scientific researchers and we are not using the scientific method. Do we have a hypothesis and then we test it, we try to repeat the tests, and then we submit it for peer review? None of us are doing that because we have no idea what we're looking at and no idea how to test our theories for the most part. So how are we going about currently with investigation techniques and with how most people are doing it? How are we going about proving the paranormal? We're doing it with historical proof. So I am a licensed private investigator. I've been a legal investigator for 12 years, looking into things, testifying, and proving things forensically and historically. Now, there is a difference between historical proof and scientific proof. Historical proof is eyewitness accounts, recordings, such as the EVP and the video that we obtain, proving that phenomenon is actually happening with a preponderance of evidence. So that is actually what we're doing as investigators. We are just showing that there is something here, and we are looking for a way to study it deeper. Like we've found that sometimes these things tend to mess with electromagnetic fields. Sometimes they mess with radiation fields, gamma rays, ion particles, and we've got different pieces of equipment that we take with us to test that and to help us find what's going on. Now, these pieces of equipment also help us debunk and find fraud when someone is actually trying to fraudulently do a haunting, or trying to fraudulently say that maybe their house, hotel, or business is haunted for financial gain. And I've actually got a really good story about that one. So every once in a while, as a private investigator, the two things that I look into kind of collide, and I try to keep it. I tried to keep the ghost hunting on the DL for a long time because I didn't want it to affect how I was treated in court, and I didn't want it to come up and damage any of the cases that I was working on. Forensically, I just didn't want it to hurt my reputation as an investigator. So, but I mean, we're all investigators. We know how to look into people's past. So people did find out that I was into the paranormal stuff. And other investigators would contact me when there was some sort of case, or they would refer people to me when there was some sort of case where, as they were looking into things, some stuff didn't make sense. Maybe they thought something was there and they just wanted an investigator with a certain background to look into it. We'll say that. So on this particular case, a woman was referred to me because she believed that something was going on inside of her house. She was very, very slow to say that she thought it was haunted. She did not know that I was a paranormal investigator. She came to me as a private investigator through my private investigation company. And she started talking about some weird stuff that was going on in her house and some things that were going on with relatives and a couple of other things. And I thought, okay, well, maybe the house is bugged. And I've actually had a couple of cases like this. Maybe the house is bugged. So I went in to do a bug sweep, or a technical surveillance countermeasures is what we call it. So I get my equipment together and I go in. And I noticed that there's not listening devices in the house, but there are speakers set up in the house. And there's a lot of weird stuff that doesn't really make sense. So while I was going through and investigating, she started talking more about things that sounded like a haunting. She started talking about people walking up and down the stairs at night and hearing moaning and hearing chains and hearing all this weird stuff. And like, she would come downstairs and furniture would be moved around, and she'd leave the house and come back and not be able to find things. She'd lay her keys down on the table and not be able to find things or find the keys when she came back. She'd look everywhere and the keys would be right back where she left it. Just kind of traditional haunting stuff that you hear about in horror movies or accounts. So long story short, I found the speakers and I found some other stuff that was really interesting. Started looking around the house and I saw where a back window had some tool marks on it, like it was being pried open. It was away from the house, so nobody would be able to hear. She would not be able to hear it opening. and I set up some of my own cameras. I do have small hidden cameras, nanny cams and stuff that we can set up in the house. She is the only person who has access to that house legally, so she's the only one who needed to know the cameras were there. Her children, she was very, very wealthy. Her children were trying to commit her so that they could take control of her assets and her wealth. So that ended up being a Scooby-Doo case. Basically on camera, I got them coming in the house and moving stuff around and just doing all sorts of crap to mimic a haunting. The chains rattling, some of the noises, the speakers were Bluetooth. So they were turning them on, causing some noises and different, I'm doing air quotes here, paranormal activity. And they were actually coming into the house, rearranging the furniture, hiding stuff while she was going around the house. And they didn't always break in to do this. Sometimes they would just be over visiting. And while she was out of the room, they would just kind of rearrange stuff. And they wanted to make her feel crazy. And they were hoping that she would start talking about this to people so that other people would think she was nuts. She talked to a certain relative who reached out to another investigator who got them to me. And I went in and basically found a Scooby-Doo case. Needless to say, those kids are not in the will anymore. When I talk about fraudulent hauntings, there are a number of different reasons people do it. Sometimes it is to drive someone crazy. Sometimes it's for revenge. Sometimes it's for money because they have an old hotel that they bought. Maybe the business is failing and they think it's going to drum up some work. But that is another reason that I do it, because I do want to, I like catching frauds. That's a shrug of the shoulder there. I just enjoy doing that. Also, it helps bring some weight to the field and shows that we're not just running out saying that not all ghost hunters are running out saying everywhere is haunted. And we are able to make a difference in people's lives, even when the activity is not paranormal. But anyway, I am starting to ramble on, and I'm going to go ahead and end this episode. Guys, this one's coming out a little bit late. I'm going to try to get a new one out every weekend. So stay tuned. Thank you guys for listening. If you're enjoying the podcast, feel free to give us a review on Apple Podcasts or whatever device or app you're using to listen to the podcast. Guys, if you enjoy this, read my blog, www.ghosthunteradviceblog.wordpress.com. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Instagram. I will see you guys, I'll talk to you guys next week.